Menstruation is something that's not talked about much publicly. Obviously, it is a very private matter. In advanced nations, women deal with their monthly cycle routinely and hygienically. But in some parts of the world, it's anything but routine or hygienic or even acceptable. In Ethiopia, women are often shunned, do not have adequate hygiene, and are subject to embarrassment during their periods. It's treated as a humiliation. We're going to talk about why and what one local organization, Dignity Period, is doing about that. Joining me in studio are Dr. Lewis Wall, professor of medical anthropology at Washington University and founder and president of the board of Dignity Period. His wife is Helen Wall, secretary treasurer of Dignity Period, and Fruwini Mebratu is founder of the Miriam Seba Sanitary Pad Factory in Ethiopia. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Dr. Wall, let me begin with you. Can you put this in kind of historical perspective? Is this basically a third world issue?
It's been a problem for female humans since the beginning of time. And many cultures have beliefs about menstruation and taboos on various practices. But by the beginning of the 20th century, we had developed adequate hygiene products that allowed women to manage their periods without fear of embarrassment or staining. And that's just not true in many parts of the world.
Ethiopia, obviously, being one of those parts of the world. Fruwini, tell me what about the situation in your country. What is it like now? What was it like 25 years ago?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. And definitely, I was the girl then. Growing up is something you never forget. So basically, it's the same thing happening right now. It's such a taboo subject. Not even your mother could tell you anything about this. So girls will get shocked. And basically, they just don't know what to do. They just deal with it. And dealing with it is just not something that you really want to think about when you think about your periods. So let me just tell you what my experience like, you know, because I truly speak to the girls back home today. And when I had my first period, I'm the youngest girl out of five girls. And
you knew it was coming.
Yes. You would think that I should know how to deal with it, or somebody in the family would tell me how to deal with this. But that wasn't the case. And when I had my first period, I was at home sharing a bed, which is common back home, with my elder sister. And I was sure that she had seen me. You know, so what I had done was went to school, you know, trying to manage my period, which at that time, I don't know what was really happening to me. When I say it's taboo, that taboo means that you're being bad or that you're ready to get married. And yeah. I was not ready to, you know, I was not being bad, or I was not ready to get married either. So I was only 13 years old when I had my first period. So when I went to school, the first person I asked was my good friend. And I said, you know, I didn't even tell her I was menstruating. Can you believe that? Mm. How taboo that is? So I said, do you know anybody who's menstruating? And she said, no. Of course, she was menstruating, you know, at that time, or maybe sooner, later than I am. But you can see the extent of the shame and the tabooness of this subject to this day. So it's exact same thing going on right now as we speak to these girls. So that's the reason that this Mariam Seba project has been started, and of course, Dignity Period is here today.
Well, I wanted to, Helen Wall, let me ask you why you and Dr. Wall, how you got involved in all of this. So Ethiopia is a long way away.
It is a long way away from home. Lewis won a Fulbright Fellowship in 2014, and we actually moved there away from St. Louis in January 2014 for 30 weeks. Mm. And within the first week, a mutual friend introduced us to Fruwini Mebratu, and we were so impressed with her persistence and her building the factory to make these reusable menstrual hygiene products that we just felt like we needed to make some sort of a charity to help her distribute them, because she was actually distributing these pads to poor girls in high schools and also to prisoners, because these women in prisons had no hygiene.
So all of it, you started before Dignity Period.
Yes.
You were on your own pretty much.
Correct.
At that time.
I started this project in 2009. So hoping that because I had the opportunity to come to the U.S. and lived here and got my education. So my heart was back home. Still, that, you know, the girls that I left behind, I often wondered how they are dealing with their periods. And nothing had changed even 10 years later, 20 years later. Nothing really happened. So somebody has to do something about this. So it was already in my head that I had to do something. That's why I started this project, honestly.
Dr. Wall, what exactly does Dignity Period do? Is it simply a matter of raising funds?
We do three things. We raise funds, we purchase the menstrual hygiene products from the factory at cost. We distribute them through our partner organization in Ethiopia, which is Mekelle University. We do education. There's a lot of biological misunderstanding about what menstruation is, both among males and females. And dealing with the problem begins with an understanding of the biology and why it's there. So we're educating girls and boys about this. And third, we're doing research. We're doing cultural research on attitudes, beliefs, and practices towards menstruation, and trying to find out the best way to articulate all three of these activities together.
Right. And Helen, perhaps you can tell me a little bit more with regard to what success you've had, how you measure what you've been doing.
Well, we have been doing research. We actually have been checking the attendance of school children's attendance in schools before we have distributed any pads and before we've distributed any of the educational materials.
Because they don't go to school when they're having a
exactly.
period, is that right?
Exactly, okay. Yes. This is a terrible thing, but girls actually don't go to school when they're having their periods because they're scared of staining their clothes and they're embarrassed and they feel they'll be laughed at. So they actually stay home. So if you've gone from school for 3 to 5 days a month, maybe, you eventually drop out. And this is really unconscionable, considering a reusable sanitary pad would keep them in school mm-hmm. so the girls could complete their education.
Mm-hmm. Verwina, this is a cultural issue, obviously, in your country and in others. How difficult is it to overcome any cultural bias associated with this?
Well, of course, one thing is education, which Dignity Period is doing. And because of education, really, this myth, this taboo can be changed. And once we give them the solution as well, once they know how to manage their periods, then they can go on with their day-to-day life. Obviously, it's no-brainer. I mean, once they get this, they know they were getting the proper education, to get rid of all the myths and taboos and what have you. And it doesn't even take time. You know, they get it and they go on with their lives. So that's how simple it is.
Is it an easy sell to both women and men, the education of this, making them fully understand what's going on?
From the experience we've got, I think it's becoming a lot easier day after day. And of course, at the beginning, you can sense the resistance and the shame and what have you. But after a while, they get it. I remember, you know, I told you that I have started this project in 2009, and most of our products at the first 2 years went to the south of Ethiopia, which is very remote. And one of the project coordinator at that time to the project that I was dealing with is that she had told me that a man, an older man, could actually say in public, I'm going to buy sanitary pad for my girl because it's important. this is because of you. That's what she told me. So you can tell that the education is really changing, even, you know, with older parents who knew very little, or they thought it was just, this is shameful to talk about, even they think it's a curse to have periods and what have you. So this is really going to be great, and we've seen the impact of it, and education is the key, the way to change it.
Dr. Wall, I asked that question because some of the things that I've read have indicated that men, for instance, will not allow themselves to be touched by a woman who's menstruating for fear it will make them sick or somehow harm them. Is this actually going on?
Many beliefs like that occur in places around the world, and it's important to understand that many of those beliefs originated before we understood what the biology of the human reproductive process was like. And we didn't understand what female body fluids contributed to pregnancy and what male fluids did and how they interacted. And so there are lots of folk beliefs that go way back into religious traditions that affect people. There are lots of Old Testament traditions in the Bible that are very similar to the kinds of beliefs that exist in Ethiopia. Ethiopian women who are menstruating are not allowed in churches or mosques, for example. But if people really understood the biology of what was going on and that this is a natural phenomenon, I think a lot of those stigmas would go away. Nobody in the United States would keep a woman from going to mass or going to church because she had a menstrual period.
Helen, what about the notion of expanding what you're doing to other countries? I mean, Ethiopia certainly is one in need, but there, I was reading recently about Nepal, where actually they'll put young women in caged huts and trees during their menstrual cycle. Yeah. Other places need the kind of thing that you're doing now.
Yes, that's very true. Most third world countries need some help with their menstrual hygiene products and brochures and education. But for now, we're working on Ethiopia. We're working in northern Ethiopia at the moment in the area of Tigray, way up north of Addis Ababa. And we're going to try and reach more people in the south and other parts of Ethiopia. Ethiopia has a population of about 90 million, and 87% of those people live in the rural areas. And we need to try and reach those women first, and then we'll expand outside the country.
Are you thinking, Dr. Wald, expansion at all?
Absolutely, the time. Yeah. But there are issues with that. And it's an important economic issue as well for these countries, because you can't ignore 50% of your brain power and expect to be a competitive country in the world today. And this simple lack of a hygiene product is hindering the education of girls and women, and it's a very simple developmental step that would enhance the dignity of girls and women, their comfort in daily life, and improve the quality of social life.
Fruini, I haven't been to your country, but I've flown over it, and I know that it's remote in many areas and much distance between villages and what have you, which I think would be a terrific challenge for you to reach these people in these remote regions.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the challenges. Like I said, I've been in the business since 2009. We've only reached to close to 600,000 when we're comparing to the 18 million girls and women who need this product. So that's a big challenge. But with the help of big NGOs, of course, Dignity Period, and associating with the Makalé University and other educational ministries, I believe we can get to them, to the people who need it.
But it will take time.
It will take time.
I'm going to try to take a quick call here from Cindy, who's calling from Town and Country. Cindy, come on into the conversation, but make it quick, please, if you would.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a volunteer activist with an organization called Results, and we work on global education legislation, and especially getting funding for education for all children, especially girls in extreme poverty. Could your guest speak a little more about the lifetime effects of girls having to stay out of school during their periods? I'm guessing that beyond slipping grades, this might be a reason why they would eventually drop out and have poor self-esteem, and what happens to their wage earning, that kind of thing.
Thank you.
Do you have any stories?
Who would like to answer that? Doctor?
Yes. I think the caller is quite accurate. We know from a lot of indicators that Educating girls and women is one of the most important investments any society can make. It makes for better mothers. It improves childhood health. It improves economic productivity. And if girls are dropping out of grade school late years or high school, they're simply not going to get into the technical areas that they can make a contribution. And that's one of the things that's really remarkable about what Frau Wiene has done. Her factory hires girls. She's got about 50 employees. She gives them a month of free training. She gives them a living wage. She provides health care benefits for them. She's built a daycare center so that they can stay at work, and they can both become married and have a family and continue to be productive economically in ways that weren't possible before.
Our time is winding down. How can people here who want to help get involved? I know you have a gala coming up this Saturday from 7 to 10 at the Missouri Botanical Garden, but how can people help you?
We have that. They can go to the website, www.dignityperiod.org. They can give online. And Give STL Day is coming up May 3rd, and we're one of the charities that's involved in that community charitable giving event.
Do you have a goal for this particular project this year?
Well, I'm hoping we can raise $100,000 at least with our gala. So everybody help us achieve that. We'd appreciate it.
We'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org, and people who would like to become involved can contact you that way. I want to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Lewis Wall. Thank you. Keep up the good work. Helen Wall, same to you. And for Wiene Mabratu, thank you so much for being with us. You keep up your good work, too. You're apparently doing a very good job in your home country of Ethiopia. Thank you all. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the top news stories of the week in our Behind the Headlines segment. We'll also talk with former KSDK meteorologist Cindy Pressler and Mike Roberts about their careers and the changing media landscape. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.